Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Shalom Aleichem, Assalam Aleichem, Namaste, Pak Sat Nam, Sat Sri Akal, Tashi Dalek, O Lila Tanyan Wasayake. Hello, may everything be well with you as it is with me. Welcome to Wednesday's class in Neo-Sabbatean Post-Lurianic Kabbalah. We will be taking up where we left off on Monday, discussing the concept of Devakut and what it means for personal consciousness and our relationship with God. Before we begin, I will now do as I do at the beginning of every shiur, and that is recite the Kaddish for the dead and the mourners of the dead. So please close your eyes as you listen and remember someone to whom you were close who has passed away. In doing so, you will honor that person's life and bless his or her memory with the light of your own consciousness. Yishkadol v'yishkadash me'rabo, bolmo divevro kirase, v'yamlik melkase, v'kayakon uv'yumekon, uv'kaya dekol beis Yisrael, v'agalo uv'izman koryev, v'yimru omein. Yehesh me'rabo, mavorak, le'olam le'olme omayo, Yisburak v'yistabak v'yisparar v'yisramam v'yisnase v'yishadar v'yisale v'yishalal Shmedikacho beraku le'olo min kol berakaso v'sharoso tush bakoso v'nekamoso da'amiron be'omo ve'imru omen. Yehe shlomo rabo min shemayo v'kiyim aleinu ve'al kol Yisrael ve'imru omen. O say shalom v'imramov hu yashe shalom aleinu ve'al kol Yisrael ve'imru amen. Thank you very much, and now I will check our recording levels to make sure I'm not over-amping everything, as I've been advised that does not make for good recordings. So, looks like we're in the realm of tolerances here within parameters, so we're good on that, and we're ready to start. As I said, we've been teaching about Devakut, which is a Hebrew word meaning literally cleaving, clinging, in hard or close pursuit of. And this is a word that we use in, and the Bible uses in the context of the relationship between the human being and his or her God. Of course, being Jewish, we're talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be He. So we've been talking about Devakut. And I talked a little bit this last meeting on Monday about Devakut and how in the Aristotelian view of unio mystica, which unio mystica is a Latin word which has come in with, in the realm of scholarship at least of mysticism to mean a mystical union between a human intellect or soul with a divine intellect or soul. And so I was talking about, in our last meeting, about the Aristotelian perspective of that in terms of terminology, in describing, in which the mystics, the Kabbalists, have described their ecstatic unions, their Devakut experiences, and the terminology they use can be classified as using Aristotelian an Aristotelian terminology that reflects an Aristotelian perspective, but not from the perspective of the Jewish mystics. They do not view their perspective in any way, shape, or form as being Aristotelian. This is a scholarly categorization. Perhaps I should get rid of it altogether because it could lead to confusion. But Devakut is from the perspective of the practitioner, the mystic, the Kabbalist, the person whose intellect or soul is ascending through the various levels of consciousness or spiritual worlds, is viewed as a specifically and exclusively Jewish experience. Why? Because Jewish mysticism is practiced within the context of Judaism, which is the religious container. That is the whole of which the part is Jewish mysticism. There's Jewish esotericism, Jewish exotericism, and in the esoteric category, there's a subcategory called mysticism. And within that is Kabbalah. And then across the board in these is the concept of Devakut. Okay, the union or the attempt to obtain union between man and God. And I've been talking about that in our last meeting. I read to you from a passage from a book titled The Meaning of Consciousness, written by Edward Ettinger, one of the many gifted pupils, but he is certainly in the handful of preeminent gifted pupils of the great 20th century theologian and psychologist Carl Gustav Jung. And in that book, The Meaning of Consciousness, Edward Ettinger has this passage. He says, quote, "The experience of being the knowing subject, however, is only one half of the process of knowledge. The other half is the experience of being the known object. The ego," now he's referring here, when he says the ego, he's talking about the human personal ego consciousness. Okay, so he says the ego as knower conquers the outer or inner other by relegating it to the status of known object. And I discussed that a little bit, and I'm going to discuss this some more. I started to discuss the two opposites, as we will here, that are described in the statement by Edward Ettinger based on the work of Carl Jung. And that is the knowing subject versus the known object, or the ego and the other, other in quotes, meaning not ego, the ego and the not ego. Okay, and he says that in that concept known as other, there are two categories, outer and inner. So the ego deals with, has to deal with, outer entities and entities that exist inside the human mind or mind, body, soul, spirit, whole that we can call a being consciousness or a human being. Okay? And so I want to talk a little bit more about that today, because it's not an easy concept to wrap one's mind around just the first time one hears and considers it. It's just not intuitively easy to grasp. So I'm going to discuss this some more. The word other, in quotes, as it was used by Ettinger and is used in a Jungian depth psychological context, if you will, or even in terms of how I'm teaching this concept of divine mind versus ego consciousness, okay? The concept of other is the word that is the word we use to distinguish the known object from the knowing subject. Now, the human ego regards it only itself as, in quotes, I, not the word like the organ, the physical organ in our skulls, of which we have two eyes, the visual organs, but the concept of I, the first person pronoun, I. Okay, so when the ego thinks of, regards, contemplates, conceptualizes, visualizes, or speaks of I, using the word I in the personal pronoun, as a personal pronoun, what does it mean? It means first and foremost, that which is in the frontal lobes of the human brain, which is the location of in the brain, and the location of the human mind, which the center of consciousness is called the ego consciousness. All right? The ego consciousness is the center of human consciousness in each physical being. But I also, and secondarily, includes the body, because the ego consciousness is inseparable from the body. If we separate the ego consciousness from the body, such as occurs in situations in which a person has had some traumatic physical trauma, or a tragic event happened to them, and they end up in the hospital hooked up to machines that are doing the work of breathing and pumping blood and keeping the organs by artificial means alive, keeping the body artificially alive, but there's no brain activity. That's what we have when the ego consciousness is no longer there. We have a physical body in a vegetative state. There is no ego consciousness. It is not there. And this can be proven empirically by virtue of the fact that an EEG shows flat brain waves. No brain activity. It's some doctors call this brain death. But it's not brain death, because certain autonomic functions are continuing to occur by virtue of the fact that the body is being forced artificially to respirate. It means the lungs are working, artificially being inflated like balloons and then deflated. And then the blood is being pumped by virtue of, actually through, you know, whatever heart-lung machines they use. People almost always, quote-unquote, pull the plug in this situation. Because there's no hope when this happens, at least I'm unaware of any recorded instances that can be validated, in which a person returned from brain death. Actual brain death. Where the EEG shows a flat line. And it's been this way for, you know, 8 or more hours. Okay? But the ego consciousness is what animates the body. It's the connection to the animating soul. It is, in fact, the nephesh. It is the organ in the human body that receives the energy that flows throughout the entire universe that we as religious persons attribute to God. And in the Judaic religious container or religion, we call the Shafa, God's Shafa, his divine sustenance. That energy flows throughout the entire universe. But with respect to living beings, the living being has to have a nephesh, an animating soul, which is the organ that receives. The organ, either in a plant, an animal, or a human being, that receives that divine sustenance, that energy that courses throughout the universe, that comes from the divine mind, from God, and through using that that energy, activates the organism and makes that collection of organic molecules go from an inanimate to an animate state. Okay. Along with that is consciousness. In our case, human consciousness. In animals, animal consciousness. In plants, plant consciousness on a much lower level. Okay. And where is it located? As I just said, it's located in the frontal lobes of the human brain. Okay, and the ego consciousness regards the concept of I as being, first of all, it, and then secondarily, the human body in which it has been positioned at the moment of birth. Now, to help visualize these concepts, let's make us a model. And you can do this as I'm talking. I'd like you to do this. Get a piece of a sheet of blank typing paper. Any piece of paper will do, but that would serve very well. A blank sheet of typing paper and a pencil. And then I'm going to make a model using set theory. We will go through this procedure step by step. Now, first of all, hold up that piece of paper in your hands, and you'll hear me. I'm doing this as we go along. This is the piece of paper. Okay, I'm holding this piece of paper up, as you should be doing, and I'm looking at it. It's blank on both sides. Mine happens to be rectangular, 8.5 by 11, which is probably what yours is if it's typing paper. Conceptually, theoretically, as a model, it should be round, but I don't have a round sheet of typing paper, so this rectangular 8.5 by 11 will have to do. And that's okay. That works just fine. Now, what do we see here? First of all, we're going to concentrate on what is not, what this paper is not. We're going to concentrate on the space all around this piece of paper as I hold it up. Now, in this room I'm in, there's air, and in your room, there's air. Air is invisible, but you know it exists because you can breathe it. You can feel it as you breathe it in and exhale it, and it carries oxygen into your lungs, which is necessary for your physical life. Okay? Now, imagine that invisible space is not air, but because air is something, but it is nothing. It is ayin in Hebrew. It is nothing. But it is not confined just in this room that I'm in or that you're in. Neither is it confined in your city, your state, your province, your nation state, continent, planet, solar system, galaxy, or universe. It is not confined in any of those things. It extends outward infinitely. So this nothingness is infinite. Okay, and that's going to be the first set. And by set, what I'm talking about is a mathematical concept, a mathematical methodology of describing and grouping things. All right. So the first set is everything outside this piece of paper, everything, but it's indescribable. It's ineffable. It's nothing. It's transcendental. In fact, so what I'm describing now is the transcendent eternal, Ein Sof. And Ein Sof, which existed prior to the creation of the universe, is the transcendent God, the unknowable God, the indescribable God. That's why I was having so much trouble trying to describe it just now. It's easiest described by a process of negation, by saying what it's not. Ein Sof is not this piece of paper that we're looking at. Ein Sof is not this desk. Ein Sof is not this world. Ein Sof is not this ego consciousness that's speaking to you right now through the means of activating its physical body parts and its brain. Ein Sof is not the planet, the universe, the galaxies, any of those things. Ein Sof is not the created things. It is transcendent, utterly unimaginable, incomprehensible, indescribable. Ein Sof is Ayin. It is nothing that we can conceive of. Therefore, it is nothing. But it is more than that, as you'll see in a moment. Or it becomes more than that. because everything that can be conceived already exists in an eternal present within Ein Sof. But it has not been manifest, it has not been actualized, it has not gone from potential to actual, unmanifest to manifest. Okay, so Ein Sof, which is Hebrew in literally for without end, is the transcendent eternal God. Through the divine process of Tzimtzum, which is Hebrew for contraction, Ein Sof withdraws its light away from and into itself. Imagine, if you will, your body, and your body was coextensive and self-contained, but existed everywhere simultaneously without boundary. There would be no room to create. There would have to be a place that you could create. You'd have to make a place, a divine womb, so to speak. And to do that, you would have to withdraw a part of yourself into and away from itself, creating a void in which you could create a womb. Not a room, but a womb. Okay, so this is what Ein Sof did in a process called Tzimtzum, meaning contraction. And so, once it did this, there was this divine space called the Tehiru, okay, or the primordial space, and Ein Sof then flooded this space with directed beams of holy light, or a Kedusha. Okay, creating the first created thing, the first creation. This first creation is, if you're looking at it from a Kabbalistic perspective using the Ten Sefirot, it would be Keter. Okay, meaning the crown, which is also called Ayin, which is nothing, but is also all and everything. Okay, and we can symbolize this by the piece of paper. We can say that this is the immanent, or excuse me, the transcendental, the immanent God, El Kol, the all and everything. So everything is included in this blank piece of paper, which is separate and distinct from Ein Sof, which is everything not on this piece of paper. So everything created is going to be on this piece of paper. The set of all things, we could say it this way, the set of all things is on this piece of paper right now without drawing anything. It's all there. Okay? In impotentia, unmanifest. Okay, now take your piece of paper and draw and also I want to say, this is the immanent God. This is God, the divine mind. Okay? As opposed to the transcendent God, whose thoughts are not our thoughts, and whom we cannot understand, and may not be able to understand us. We don't know. There's no empirical method of learning anything about Ein Sof. No one has ever seen Ein Sof. No one has ever returned to describe Ein Sof. We don't know that anyone has ever reached Ein Sof. But anyway, so we have this piece of paper, and this is the immanent God, El Kol, all and everything. Okay, all possible things. Now we're going to start to differentiate these things, because they're undifferentiated with just this blank piece of paper. The first thing that we're going to differentiate is all possible universes. So I want you to take your pencil and draw the largest possible circle that you can. I guess it's going to end up being egg-shaped, which is fitting, isn't it? Elliptical. The largest possible ellipse that you can draw on this. On the outside of that circle, on one corner, I want you to write all possible things. Okay? Now, on the outside edge, just inside the line of the circle you just drew, I want you to write all possible universes. That's right, there's more than one universe, as we know from quantum physics now. We know now that there is, they thought at first there were three, then five, then seven, and now, or then 11, and now they're saying an infinite number of universes exist. An infinite number of universes exist in parallel dimensions having points of contact. So write just inside the big line all possible universes. Okay. Now, within the set of all possible universes, you could draw all kinds of circles. These would be all the different, an infinite number of universes. But to make, because we have in this method of going down in scale, in descending from greater to smaller sets, we have a long way to go, many steps to go. Instead of drawing an infinite number of tiny circles called universes, we're going to just draw one. So draw very close as you can a parallel line to that first outside line that you drew. And this is going to describe our universe. Write that on the inside of that line, our universe. So you can see what we're getting is concentric ellipses here. Okay, then within our universe is the set of all galaxies. And they say now that there's like a billion galaxies within our universe. Maybe that's a billion billion, I don't know, or a million billion. It's a number too large for me to really get my, to conceive of. Okay, then within the set known as all galaxies, draw another line, and you're going to have our galaxy. And we're going to continue this now, and I'm going to just, to save time, just read off these levels that we can go down. We can go in much more detail than I'm going, but in a macro sense, here's the levels that we go downward, that we descend downward in the process of creation. Creation is a downward ray. In fact, Gurdjieff described it as the ray of creation. And each level you go down, you're under an increasing number of laws of the universe. You have less and less freedom. Okay, so where were we at? What was our last level? We were at the level of our galaxy. Well, within the set known as our galaxy, there's the set known, I mean, you've got different sets. You've got gas clouds, right? You've got pulsars. You've got black holes. You've got dark matter, okay? Dark energy. But we'll just keep it easy here and we'll say, all star clusters, because they know now that within a galaxy there are large groupings of stars called star clusters. And then within the set of all star clusters is our, meaning our planets, our solar system's star cluster. And within our star cluster are a number of solar systems. But we're going to go down to that next level and say the next set is our solar systems. Now we've come down to the level of our solar system. And we're already in the process of creation down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. At the eighth level in our descent of the ray of creation, we're on the eighth level of creation. Okay, and then the next level down, the next set that we can look at, and remember these are all concentric ellipses or circles drawn here, is our planet Earth. Now we're getting personal, aren't we? Okay, we're bringing it home. On the next set, we can describe on our planet Earth, out of all the things we could describe on our planet Earth and categorize, we're going to draw a circle or ellipse that represents and contains within it all life on our planet Earth. And then within that set, we will draw another smaller set, a subset, as called in mathematics, of all sentient life on our planet Earth. And within that subset is another subset that is known as all human beings on our planet Earth. And then finally, out of all, and we can go even more part steps, you know, but I'm speaking kind of universally here, so we'll stick to this level. Within the set of all human beings on the planet Earth is one human being, and that is your own being consciousness, which is comprised of your physical body, your brain, your spirit or heart, and your soul, four components. Okay, and then within that is the subset of your own personal ego consciousness. This is the circle, the set that has only one thing in it. At last, we're down to this, and that is called, that represents the concept, it's called the personal ego consciousness, and it represents the concept of, in quotes, the personal pronoun I. Now that is 12, at least 12, it is 12 levels of creation away from the transcendent God known as Ein Sof. So Ein Sof determined to create. This is what we read about in the first chapter of Genesis. And he said, "Let there be light." And then this is when creation began. And all things came into existence, the piece of paper. And it goes on and on through 12 different levels, at least 12 different levels, and under which is an ever-increasing number of laws and restrictions. Because, for instance, the personal ego consciousness has to conform to the laws that affect all human beings. No personal ego consciousness can violate the laws that define what a human being on the planet Earth is. The ego consciousness has available to it only those activities, thoughts, desires that are capable of being experienced. And let's just put it this way. The personal ego consciousness can only experience that which any other human being, born without defect anyway, it has the same potential to experience. And all human beings can only experience that which they experience all of the restrictions of sentient life. If you walk into a blast furnace in a steel mill, being a sentient life form, you're going to be converted to your component molecules. And your sentient life will be destroyed. This is a law that you're under. So you're under certain physical laws. Being on the planet Earth, you're under certain physical laws that are different for you than if you were on the planet Jupiter, where the gravity would be so great that you'd be squished. And those are different physical laws. They all pertain, of course, to a set of physical laws that exist according to science all through the universe. They don't know that they exist outside of this universe, but they believe that they exist at least throughout our universe. So there's all of these laws that we have to obey, because they're the system that was set up by God when God created. Okay, now what I want to point out about all of this descending levels of consciousness, this descending levels of creation, comes down to this. Look in the very center of what you've drawn. You've drawn a circle or an ellipse. with 11 other circles concentric to and surrounding, I guess that's concentric to it. Okay, from the perspective of personal ego consciousness, all those others, any one of, and all of the others, in fact, represent what Edward Edinger and Jung is talking about when they mention the word, in quotes, other, as opposed to ego consciousness. But it's only a matter of perspective, because from any other one of these circles, any one of these other sets, from their perspective, the human personal ego consciousness is a part of their whole. For instance, the personal ego consciousness is contained, is it not, within the next circle, which is titled All Human Beings on Our Planet Earth? Yes, it is. It's also contained within the next circle out, which is All Sentient Life on Planet Earth. That's right. The personal ego consciousness is a part of all sentient life on Earth. It's a part of all life on our planet. It's a part of the planet Earth. It's a part of the solar system, our star cluster, all star clusters. Well, maybe not all star clusters. I guess we'd have to have proof that the personal ego consciousness existed there. But mathematically speaking, in terms of set theory, it is a part of that larger set. It is a part of the whole. So looking at it strictly from that point of view, mathematically, it is true. Which is a subset. All star clusters are a subset of our galaxy, and our galaxy is a subset of all galaxies, etc., on up to all possible universes, and then finally, all possible created things. All created. Creation, in other words. Okay. Let me check our time here. Okay, so I'll finish off this topic and then we'll be finished for today. So as I said, this concept of ego versus other is only a matter of perspective. It's only relevant to the ego itself. It's only relevant to the ego. It's not relevant to all life on planet Earth. Your own personal ego consciousness, all life on planet Earth doesn't care about your own personal ego consciousness. It's got lots of other ones. You're just one of billions on this planet. Okay, from any other perspective, the human personal ego consciousness is just a part of the whole. And from the perspective of the immanent God, that is all and everything, this all created things, this piece of paper itself, the human personal ego consciousness is also a part of the whole, a minuscule part of the whole. And in fact, we can see from the model as we hold it up that this is so. It's the innermost circle that we drew on this piece of paper, which we labeled overall, all and everything, all created things. Another way of putting this is that all levels of creation, including the ego consciousness, are concentrations are lesser concentrations or individual smaller concentrations of the divine, the overall divine consciousness. It is the ego consciousness's lack of awareness of this bigger picture of which we made this model. It is the ego consciousness lack of consciousness that creates its delusion of separation from other things and leads to its alienation and dysfunction that is destroying our relationships with others, in quotes, in the universe. Others being our fellow human beings, whether it's family conflicts that we're involved in, family alienations, whether it's neighbor-to-neighbor dysfunction, alienation, or other groups, other nations, or whether it's alienation from the earth and the environment. This feeling of separation that so many of the ego consciousnesses, the being consciousnesses here, the human beings on this planet, have, especially in Western culture, in Europe, and especially in the United States, this feeling of total isolation from and regard for the rest of this planet, the plants, the animals, the systems of regeneration, that the systems of harmony and balance that keep it all going, the dynamics. Human beings in the Western Hemisphere tend to, in North America, I'll put it that way, and especially in the United States, tend to think that they can do anything they want, anything that they want. And there is no consequence. It's just extract whatever we want from everything and anything around us, whether it's a human beings, exploit human beings, exploit animals, exploit plants, exploit entire ecosystems, pollute entire ecosystems, destroy the ability of the earth to regenerate itself through its systems. It's what we're witnessing right now with the current climate, global warming crisis, which is inevitably coming now. It's coming now because we refuse to think that anything could affect us, that we could have done anything that's going to possibly destroy the world in which we live as we know it and make life impossible for us. But anyway, it is the ego consciousness lack of awareness of this bigger picture, the lack of its interrelatedness to all beings and things of which it is a part. The failure to see, the ego's failure to see that it's merely one part, one of many parts of these greater wholes, these greater systems in which it participates and on which it relies for its own existence. It's its failure to see that that is the most imminent threat to the survival of our species today. All right. That's all the more that I have to say for today, and we will continue on along this line and return more to specific teaching on Devakut, on what it means to know God, in our next session coming up on Monday. In the meantime, I have, as always, recorded this teaching session, this shiur, and as an MP3 file, and it'll be available on our website at www.beitshemtov.org, with Beit being spelled B as in boy, E-I-T, S-H-E-M-T-O-V.org, under the audio archive navigation button, later this evening. Also, I'll be rebroadcasting this tonight, same location, same room, at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific time. Hope that you'll be there, and bring your friends. And if not, I'll next see you on the following Monday, and at this same time. All right. Until we meet again, I ask you to remember God at least twice, because what are you doing when you remember God? Pop quiz here. We're bringing God into our consciousness, and when we do that, we unite with and join with God, and that's cleaving to or devakut on at least a lower level. So remember God at least twice a day, and in the meantime, I ask God's blessing to be upon you. Go from strength to strength. Be well. Zygezunt.